Is my face computing?
Welcome back, Rhetoric Warriors Podcast. We are the canaries in the linguistic coal mines. We're out there. If you have a message, we'll dissect it. We'll take it apart and show you how it works. I am Dr. Dan French, comedian and rhetorician, PhD in rhetoric, late night comedy writer. That's my games. This particular channel that I've created for Rhetoric Warriors, something a little bit different. It's called Comedians with Issues, and this is our second episode. It's a sub-channel in the Rhetoric Warriors podcast universe, like the Marvel universe. I want to give great comics a place to just wail on social issues and politics. Like Bent and I were just talking about this. Usually when you work as a stand-up, you have to worry about offending the audience, losing half the audience, and social issues and politics a lot of times will do that. But here, man, we're just going to power it up. I want to hear their best thoughts. I'm the audience. I love this stuff. So this is perfect for me. And a note to listeners, stand-ups are unoffendable. And I get it that most regular humans aren't. If you get offended or if you think you might get offended, please just leave. That's totally your right. And some of this is pieces, they're ideas, some of it's full bits. And you'll hear a little bit of material that these guys actually do on stage, which means if you hear a little bit of it, go buy the CD so you can hear the full bit. These guys all sell CDs. You know how to find them. Just put their name in and go buy their stuff. My guest this week on episode 2, Bent Washburn, wayward Mormon, wayward American.
Yeah. Right?
He's hurtled off to the safety of Germany.
Yeah. That's ironic there. He would go to Germany.
Comedy still has him. Still has him in his tractor beam. It's not going to let go. And Bent is a thinky comic. My favorite comics just really applies some brain to some of this stuff. Bent Washburn, what's up, buddy?
Oh, not much. Just over, like you said, I'm in Germany, right? I was feeling safe at first. It's feeling pretty safe over here, and then less safe. And then we couldn't get vaccines over here for a while. And you guys just had them. You just flooded the arms. Everybody got drugs over there, as they would. And we weren't getting them here. We were getting like viruses.
What did you say before we came on?
That's what we would be good at. That we would be good at getting drugs into hands and arms. We've been doing it from the beginning. It's us. Drugs. Well, we can get those into people. Sure.
We are the pill country, right? We have perfected the pills.
Oh, yeah. And the syringes and we've got that down. They didn't have that down over here in Germany. So it's been locked down since October. I haven't really gotten to try a lot of the ideas I've had screaming, bumping around in my head. I'll walk the dog every day and I find myself screaming, not screaming, but kind of growling out this latest angry thing. And then I notice that the dog's tail's between his legs and he's like, are you all right? 'Cause he thinks I'm yelling at him.
So you did the bits for the dogs. So the dogs, they're also precious. They're also a little offendable, the dog.
Yeah. Hound dog did not like it. He doesn't like what I have to say. He's worried. But I haven't been running bits. I haven't got to meet a lot of people. I did meet, I met this the other day. This is interesting. My daughter's going to German Grundschule, grade school.
Okay. That's better than grade school.
Yeah, grade school, Grundschule. But one of her friends is a little Turkish girl her age. I go over and meet the parents. We start talking. My German's horrible. So I'm speaking in broken German. They're speaking in broken English. We're trying to talk about, and politics comes out. Turns out this Turkish man, well, he's not Turkish, first of all, he's German, born there, but has kept his Turkish passport. Germany, unlike America, it doesn't absorb people. You can live there your whole life as Turkish and Germans won't say you're German.
Really? Even though he was born in Germany?
Yeah.
Does he have German citizenship?
If he got German citizenship, he would still be looked at as Turkish. It's not like America. That's something Americans don't understand. A woman in Berlin pointed that out to me like 10, 11 years ago at a show. She said, you know, what I love about America is it's the one country in the world where you can move there. And like the next year, you're American. She said, that will never happen in Germany. And I've seen it. It's true. It just, you don't, well, you're not German. He's born here. His wife's born here. But the neighbors, a lot of the people here treat him like Turkish. So he's complaining about this. And he says, Bavaria, here in Bavaria, and Bayern is a neighboring state. It's where the Nazis' strongholds were. So they're all little Nazis in the head. They're still kind of Nazis in the head. Then he reveals he is a huge Trump fan. So right away, I'm like, wow, how's that? And he is. He loves Trump. He thinks Trump's the greatest. And then within 5 minutes, he is showing me a website on his phone that proves the Jews run the world. And all that's living in the same head. And so when he said, there's still Nazis in the head, they're here. And I said, yeah. I don't know whose head you're talking about. But I mean, I understand he's angry. He's Muslim, you know, so I can't ask all the Muslims to suddenly love. I can't, you know. But that was a fun. That,
right? Just the, like you said, that it can live in one head.
Yeah. Yeah.
The fear of the actual Nazis and then the unawareness that these guys are Nazi light working their way up.
Yeah. That's in the past. You're in the present, dude. But I don't think what he's doing is too far from what's happening everywhere. I think the whole thing that's happening in the world right now with this outbreak of nationalism everywhere, it just flies in the face of reality. Within a few minutes, this guy works over at the local, I won't do too much info, he's a car factory guy, but he knows a lot about the cars. And he says, a few years ago, every car or most of the cars, the components, the car was made in that town. But he says, now nearly every car that you get anywhere is from, the pieces come from all over the world. And it's true of everything we use, right? It's all global. And yet here's a guy in front of me just screaming nationalist, nationalist, nationalist. And then he doesn't even belong to his own nation that he's, it's so weird. He's screaming nationalist. He's part of a country that won't let him in, you know, because they're of their nationalist tendency. None of it makes sense. None of it. None of it.
Well, it's in some ways, it's like all the old ideologies, like the ability to split people into groups, which allowed people to figure out kind of, oh, villains over here, good people over here. Yeah. I can trust them. I'm safe here. I'm not safe over here. Now those things have been destroyed by globalism. Like you said, like the parts are all coming in. It's all coming in through the culture, through the people, through the cars.
Yeah.
Human beings have not adjusted. They do not know how to find safety within globalism.
Yeah, they don't know how to find a group. And when things get tight, you got to have a group, because what you're going to do is you're going to go to another group, kill them and take their shit. That's what we've done forever.
Right.
We've done that. We've like, well, we had four sandwiches. Now we have two. He's my buddy. You two are out. You know, I mean, these bonds come into play when the pressure hits and they're broken and mixed up right now.
Well, you've been through a lot of groups. Where do you feel safe these days?
Yeah, and that, man, you nailed it. I have been through a lot of groups. I started out, I grew up Mormon, and then this didn't work. I left that. And then Republican, and boy, that didn't work. I left that. And so I was in America, and I thought, this doesn't feel safe. I'm in Germany. But my wife works for the government, but apparently the government's evil, you know, the evil, the deep state.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know where I belong. I have no idea. I can't figure it out. I don't like any of the groups.
Comedians? Do you feel safe in the comedians?
Mostly. Yeah. Mostly.
Yeah, you're accepted in the comedians. In
yeah.
That tribe.
That's my group. That's not a very good group to have. It's not,
they're not going to protect you from much.
Oh, no. No. I mean, if you can get them booked somewhere, they might do something for you. So this Turkish guy, Dan, he said, this is why I love Trump. He brings this up. He said, Trump didn't start any wars. That gave me an idea for the bit. And it's the bit I want to do is when people say that, which they do, they say lots of things about that he did, his accomplishments. Didn't start. Well, and I said, but he started a lot of fights, first of all. And he tried to start a civil war. I mean, he really tried. I mean, he just failed. And it's because he's delusional. It turns out his weakness, his self-delusion, turned out to be our best. That was our saving grace. The fact that he was not, you know, smart enough or apparently to know, like, no, that's just going to break everything. That's not going to make anything new. You can't. And I do. I wanted to tell breaking.
Yeah.
What was that?
He's great at breaking.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's where he's strong. Make chaos and then he can do his thing. So I was going to tell the guy, well, I would rather he fucked with other countries instead of ours. Frankly, I miss the guy that went over the ocean and fucked with people. I want that guy back. That's how bad he is. Like, could you just go fuck with people elsewhere for a while? But he dicked just with us constantly. Drove me nuts.
Yeah, I describe it sometimes as, you know, America's a Porsche. Like, it's the greatest Porsche ever built. And he's a clown who found a way to jump behind the driver's, into the driver's seat, get behind the wheel. Yeah. He's suddenly driving a car that he could never have created in any way. And he's just doing whatever he wants with it.
And he has no idea what it does or how it works. Yeah, at all.
Just rev the engine, like, turn the wheel, man.
Screaming down the highway in third gear. Someone says, you should shift to fourth. Whatever, I do it my way. That was ingenious what I did. Idiot.
They do say that he didn't actually start wars.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's...
He kept him going.
I don't know if that's a real criteria, is it? Like,
no, because first of all, this idea of starting where a war starts, I mean, how are you going to figure that out? I mean, when did the Middle East thing start? I mean, when did 9/11, when did that war start? I mean, you go back to, was it Lebanon? Was it when we backed Israel? Was it the Balfour Edict? I mean, it all is connected, all this stuff.
Well, and I would argue that he may not have started the war yet, but he certainly laid all the kindling, like injuring the, you know, our relationships with allies.
Oh, yeah.
Emboldening the enemies. Like, he set up like a lot of great kindling for a war to be ignited. Yeah. Somebody wants to come along and do it.
I think so. I think he did. I think he did. That's why, I mean, that's, in my opinion, that's why that's one of the many reasons that I couldn't handle him. What's been going on too is, as I get angry at him, I start getting angry at the people who vote for him or supported him. In the beginning, I didn't as much, but lately, after he lost the election and refused to concede, and then the January 6th, and then all these people that still believe it's a stolen election, I don't know what to do. I mean, this is how, I get this theory. This is another idea for a bit.
Okay.
I think Trump's most vocal supporters make him seem smart and sane. That would be and I used to, when he was first running, I did a bit where I'd say, I saw Trump, I thought, what an idiot, he can never be president. And then you see at one of his rallies, he said, well, he's the smartest guy in this arena. So, and he's definitely the most presidential. There's like 12,000 people here. He's the most. But it seems like Trump will say something dumb. And the way they protect him is they all get together and act in a way that makes him seem relatively sane and intelligent. Like, he says, march to the Capitol, quote, fight like hell. They don't just do that. They grab some zip ties, some bear spray, QAnon flag, a buffalo horn hat, ditch their shirt, paint their chest. Voila. Now Trump seems smart and level-headed at this point. He seems like a guy with a plan. I mean, compared to the buffalo guy and all those. So you think he's stupid and crazy, but then you see that and you go, well, okay, Trump's evil. He's not.
Yeah, there's always something crazier in the circus, right? When you go to the circus.
Oh, yeah.
Like, hey, wait a minute. That guy's getting in with tigers. That's
yeah.
those people are playing wires. Look at that.
That lady's swallowing a sword with flame. You go around the corner. Hey, there's four guys shooting up behind that behind that booth. And that's what they are. They're like that group of people.
Yeah, this guy over here selling peanuts, not so crazy. Not so crazy.
Yeah. I've been accused of having the Trump derangement syndrome, which is what is when a deranged person calls you deranged just repeatedly, that's what starts to get like. it's like, I feel like my dad was a psychiatrist. And I feel like if I was in his shoes and I walked in the halls and every crazy person was calling me crazy, you know, it just feels like a total flip. I will say too, I've been following what I think happens. I do think there was some derangement when it came to viewing Trump. I mean, I know I flipped out. I think part of it was when he was chanting to have his political opponent locked up on the campaign trail. That's where I started like, this seems like something you do in Venezuela, or what are they doing? And all the people were chanting along. I thought it was fun. I'm like, this is, so I did freak. I was freaking out early with him. And I think a lot of people did. And I know, as I've read about it, there were some reporters. I think Washington Post had some reporters that got things. They were inaccurate about Russia and Trump. And so did CNN. And what they did to those reporters, they fired their asses. That's what they did. They don't have a job. Whereas at Fox, if you tell the truth, you get promoted. I mean, it's been a complete flip between this. It's a complete opposite. It's an entirely opposite world.
Yeah, I think it's funny, like the derangement syndrome. So the cool thing I think that the right gets that the Democrats don't give out is the right gives out script, especially little script fragments like lock her up. You know, that's a chant, and a good chant they can all handle. Anybody can do a chant.
Yeah.
It's three words. Yeah. And they can all do it together. So they get some script there. And with even the name Trump derangement syndrome,
it's
three words, you know, and it's got syndrome in there. And so they just hit you with this unthought out script that's been given to them.
Yeah.
And they won't think it through. They're like, no, uh-huh. I got a little torpedo now and they're just going to hit you with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had a friend over and over. Call me a libtard.
Yeah. That's all they will do. And they won't, I mean, when they tell me that I don't think and that you don't read. Like I had one guy, he claimed there was no such thing. He's a Facebook friend. I kept a few of these friends because they've been friends for years. And in all other aspects of our lives, they've been nice. It's just this, they've turned into just assholes, just morons and assholes. I don't know which went down more, their IQ or their decency, but man, in this arena and everywhere else, it can be wonderful, but there. So this guy says there's no such thing as racial bias. It's all BS. It's all made up and blah, blah, big, long. He's always posting big, long, stupid screeds, but lots of big words. And I just pointed out like, well, you know, just as a fact, like jury selection is a good example of it's a concrete example of systemic racism. And we have mostly all white juries all over still. And it's because they tried to stop it with this Batson versus Kentucky Supreme Court ruling. And it kind of backfired. And now they just have figured out a way to get around Batson versus, and you can, he, and I sent him a little article about Batson versus Kentucky and the history of it. And he just sends me back like a 6-paragraph screed about the bias in the mainstream media and how all that is bullshit. And, you know, it's just, that's it. He won't even read it. He won't even read it. No, all this unrelated crap and closed. I told him, I already know what you thought of the article before I sent it to you. I wanted to know what you thought of it after you read it. You see what I'm saying? I know what you think of it before you read it. Do you understand? I already know this shit. So anyway. He's got the Fauci derangement syndrome, though. I want to work on a bit. I would like to, because they attack Fauci constantly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I posted a column today. That was my rhetoric column today. Was all about Fauci. Like, if you want to evaluate Fauci, here's the language engineering program to do it. Like, and if you don't want to follow the language, the program for establishing credibility, then you should probably shut up.
Well, they're not going to shut up. I was looking at Ingram and Tucker Carlson. I looked at their takes on Fauci and it's maddening. And I took the dog for a walk and screamed under my breath for like 20 minutes because it's devious. It's really devious. Those guys are good at misleading people.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. That's what they do. Well, it's almost like, you know, in stand-up, there are mechanical techniques which create comedy. Like just flipping something creates comedy, right? Yeah. Somebody says Trump is the greatest president ever, and like, well, let's flip that and say he's the worst president ever, whatever. And then you got new angles and all that. Yeah. And that's all Fox does. It just flips and just does the opposite of what everybody else is saying in the rational world and just says the exact opposite and drives rationalists crazy. Because you're like, well, that's completely not true.
Yeah, it drove me nuts. His stuff about Fauci, and I had this big argument with another friend about Fauci. I was like, what? I do not understand. I think I do. I think they have to shit on Fauci to make Trump look better. I mean, that's their way of exonerating Trump's dipshittery, is pushing it all onto Fauci. And I assume that's, but they are deranged. They're deranged.
Take a look at the column sometime. I want to hear your reaction to it, because it's literally, I lay out like, here's like 400 things you have to check if you want to actually establish somebody's credibility versus just sort of throwing a credibility stamp on them. But so you got a lot of stuff about religion and God since you were a Mormon and you came through that. So hit some of that. Do some of that material for us.
Okay. I wanted to do that other stuff. I didn't get into the Wuhan lab stuff. I wrote some new stuff.
Come back to it. Yeah, that's good.
We'll do it later. What was I talking about? I think with the religion, the thing that's been scary now is to see QAnon invade religion. I don't know if it invaded it. It picks up where it was petering out and dying. I think that's what's going on. I think that's what's going on. The QAnon Christians. This is one of the things they'll say is that they'll tell you God works in mysterious ways. Yeah, so do morons. Apparently, that's what I found. Idiots, very mysterious, in very mysterious ways. And I'll tell you, what was it that came across today? I came across another idea for, doggone it, it's all in here somewhere. Sorry, Dan.
Sorry. I had a joke once about God works in mysterious ways, and his weekends off are kind of weird too.
Yeah, it's everything.
There's not a whole lot of clarity in what he's up to.
No, but I think their way, that's their out. Anytime you find like this huge hole, they'll just, well, God works in mysterious ways. And that one's like, yeah, but we're not really talking stupid right now. Mysterious. We're talking stupid, aren't we? Isn't that... They'll do that,
that
too.
Adjective, that's a pretty generous adjective, mysterious.
Yeah.
Versus like, you know, it's non-compassionate, doesn't give a shit about us ways.
I want to, but Ed, all you got is a dozen zip ties, bear spray. You really think you can overthrow the most powerful nation on earth? Well, God works in mysterious ways. Stranger things have happened. That's another thing they like to say. Stranger things have happened. But we're not really dealing with strange right now. We're dealing with just really fucking stupid. That's what we're dealing with.
That is the Trump card, right? That, like, let's just move out of logic entirely and just say, hey, you can't tell me it's not completely impossible.
Yeah. Yeah. That one. It's not mysterious at all. I'll say, I mean, it is mysterious how you can be this stupid. That's a mystery that I have not been able to wrap my head around. But we shouldn't be surprised, really. There's a bit I've been working on for a long time, but there is an ark in Kentucky. Life-size. We built, our country built a life-size ark. That should have been we've got a large population of magical thinkers and we need to keep them busy. If that ever breaks out of the church and leaks into the world. And I mean, that's what it did, you know? And I think magical thinking's good. Magical thinking, you need it. Everybody needs a little magical thinking to just keep hope alive. True? I mean, true? Just enough.
Is it?
You need some baseless Yeah, you need some baseless every once in a while. We all need some baseless optimism. That's what I call it. Especially as a comic, you know that's true. That got you through the first 15 years of your career.
Right? Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So we all need that.
I will succeed at some point. Money will appear.
Yeah. But, and I like it in the religious realm. If you want to keep it in the church where it gives you that hope or whatever. But when you start, it leaks out into everything. That's that total magical thinking. It's just insane.
No, I think that's a key. Like that, yeah, that definitely, that concept. Like if you look at all the octopus tentacles of magical thinking types,
yeah,
that explains a lot.
Yeah, it does. I grew up with that. My dad was a magical thinking psychiatrist.
Really?
Oh,
what did that look like?
It's bizarre. I mean, he's a great man, one of the kindest, one of the smartest people I've ever met. Brilliant, brilliant. His brain could hold so much information. He was so insightful. But then here's a psychiatrist, he would routinely barter with his patients. Yeah, you don't barter when you're you don't like, hey, I've got a bipolar guy here who wants to build my house. Yeah, let's do that. That's a good idea. That kind of crap. Or I should go into business with this bipolar guy that I'm treating. He literally lost everything in these kinds of things. It was just, I don't know. To this day, I don't know. I don't know if that's magical thinking or just, I don't know what.
It's tragical thinking.
Tragic. Yeah, it did turn out tragical. Very much so.
Well, it's that business thinking though. And everybody has it. Like all the entrepreneurs, like here in Austin, my marketing agency makes a living off people who have magical entrepreneurial thinking.
That makes sense.
They see gates and they see, you know, these things that start in a garage and they're like, well, I'm in a garage.
Yeah. My dad was that way with gold mines. He thought, well, they found dirt and they find gold in the ground. I got ground. I got a shovel. It was just wild. He lost tons of money on fraudulent gold mining crap. Just crazy.
Is that what pulled you out of the Mormon thing? Is that there's too much magical thinking and you're a rationalist thinker?
I think the magical thinking hurts. It really hurts. I mean, you bump into, if you follow magical thinking, you at least that for me, it was painful. Yeah. Yeah, that is what I couldn't do it anymore. It was killing me.
Well, you had that bit about getting out of the Mormon church, like when you met your wife, right? Run that bit, like, you know, because you started to see like all the flaws in their, you know, programmatic way of life versus her.
Oh, yeah. No, it was, I used to do a thing. We had lots of rules. That was the thing. In order to operate, you had to believe a lot of crazy stuff. It's rationally crazy. That's why you meet every week. You meet every week so you can reconvince everybody and check in and make sure, okay, everybody, coffee's still evil, right? It's evil. Coffee's evil. Am I right? Okay, just want to know because during the week, I told someone coffee was evil and they looked at me like I was fucking crazy. So I want to make sure. And they have to do that with a whole slew of doctrines, a whole slew of them. And then when you bump into a question, they'll say, we'll just put that on a shelf. So you're just supposed to put, that's another of those mysteries of God. That shelf gets to be really full. And some of the things they asked me to believe in my church, blacks could not hold the priesthood until 1978. So I was taught, see, now I was 60. So up until I was 13, I'm in this church where they can't hold the priesthood. What that means, a 12-year-old white boy can hold the priesthood, but the black. And because of that, within the doctrine, they can't get sealed in the Mormon temple in their marriage. They can't have an eternal marriage. It basically turns into, for eternity, they're like, it's like there's a back of the bus section in heaven. It's like, as it is on earth, it shall so be in heaven. And it's, I mean, it's just racism. It's institutionalized racism. I mean, it's not slavery, and it wasn't violent in that, but it is violent, but it's not physically violent. So I was raised in that. That was the kind of, and that hurts. I mean, you can't. And then when they changed the rule in 1978, I mean, I was relieved. Everyone was relieved, except the racists. They were angry. About 5,000 true racists left the Mormon church. I believe it was a little over 5,000. The rest of the umpteen million stayed. I mean, they were literally just all doing it because everyone else was doing it for decades, you know, because you can't. So then I go on my mission and I get this unenviable task now. I've got to, well, I don't have to explain why blacks don't get, I don't have to explain why God is a racist, you know. And so that was nice that I didn't have to address that. Instead, I get to explain how God used to be a racist but changed his mind, which is way easier. And that's painful. It's awkward. And so I got older and I get out in the world. And part of what changes this really in the end is you meet a black person, you talk to him, you find out like, well, these are just people. And so I got quite a ways out and I understand what's going on. And do you remember Floyd J. Phillips?
No.
Did you ever meet him? Well, he was a comic out of Chicago, a black guy. And he's hilarious and just crazy and funny. We met at the San Francisco Comedy Competition. We became good buddies. And he knew I was Mormon, but he didn't know anything about Mormon doctrine or history. And we hang out for two weeks, become really close, like you do in a comedy competition, right? And I get a call a few days later. His sister knew about Mormons and told him all about it. And the phone call, like, man, this is Floyd. And I can't do his voice. He's got the craziest voice. Just this crazy. Is it true? My sister told me that Mormons. Yeah, Floyd, it's true. Well, you motherfucker. What? Like, when are you going to tell me that? It's like, well, it's kind of awkward. I don't know when to bring that up. And there's no way. Oh, by the way, before we even have lunch, you should. But magical thinking. Yeah, it keeps all of that. It keeps all those contradictions afloat. And I came out of that. It's amazing. You know, from that place, Dan, they weren't. What really, I think this encapsulates it. I wouldn't say, well, by today's standards, definitely racist, but my grandmother's a wonderful, loving, kind person and generous to everybody. She's not violent, but there was still that doctrine and a belief in it and an apologetics for it. Well, you know, the weaker, I mean, it's a racist doctrine. And those are the people that had to teach me racism was bad, which I think is true for most of America. Most of us, a racist taught us that racism was bad in a way. You know, they had these, I don't know if they're racist. What, maybe we need more terms.
What, because like the intensity, once the racism gets up to a certain intensity, like everybody can see it, like slavery.
Yeah.
They're like, oh yeah, yeah, I'm watching them kill these people. And you know,
Seems pretty wrong.
It's bad. But the light kind of abstract racism, like you're talking about something. I never knew that about the Mormons.
But it's a doctrinal thing. You know, I mean, it doesn't kick in until after, but the ramifications in the here and now are very real within that culture. Yeah. And
you end up literally dealing with this forever because this was largely a white Anglo-Saxon overtaking of the natives. You know, we genocided the natives out. And then we started importing slaves and other nationalities started getting in here. But the dominant culture, like if it had started, like whites were 20% and blacks were 20% and Latino, you know, then it wouldn't be quite the same thing. But the whites were like, hey, we've had this forever and now we're having to give it up. And you start rooting out like, hey, we gave you this. Like, but look at all this. Like, you know, I gave you. But when you start, you know, that's the idea of systemic, like it's everywhere. And like in the tiniest molecules of white majority culture doesn't see other people in the same way as other whites, you know?
Yeah.
So how do you get that out? How do you
get I don't know. I'm sure it's in me. I mean, that's what I always like. I'm a, I've been accused of being a racist about, well, I have a bit that I do that's on my second Dry Bar special. And people will come on and listen to it and then say, I liked it until the racist jokes. And then it was stupid.
Well, what was
and
the bit? Let's see if it sounds racist.
Well, it's talking about, I'm stopping for televisions. Okay. So I preface this by saying I'm in an age where the social mores advance, but I'm stuck back here. Okay. And I don't know how to joke and kid, and I don't know when I'm stepping on toes because I'm older and the younger. So yeah, I'm shopping for televisions. Have you ever heard me do this joke? I'm shopping for televisions, or I'm shopping for a television amidst the televisions. I'm trying to pick out a screen, which is stupid because once you get at home, the screen's isolated. You can't tell whether it's shitty or good unless you have something worse or better next to it. But regardless, I'm trying to pick out.
So you're going to buy 25 TVs.
Yeah. And you've done it before. You're like, what the hell am I doing? And I narrow it down to like a Sony, the very famous Japanese brand, right? And the LG. And then a Samsung, maybe. And then I turn to the clerk. And I say, I hate to say this, but I'm afraid to me, all Asian televisions look alike. And then the clerk shakes it off. But here's the thing. The audience always, half the audience like, ugh, they... Oh, and I think that's a television. I'm talking about a television
joke. Yeah.
One, two, I'm talking about a phrase which could be racist and often is, but isn't necessarily racist. It's a phrase in and of itself. And three, I could not tell the difference between the two televisions. I couldn't. The clerk could. Of course he could. He's Korean or Japanese. I can't tell. So, and then that's the whole joke is how I have a difficult time telling the difference between these two nationalities. And I don't think that's racist. That's me just not having enough experience. I've had a lot of Korean friends, not as many Japanese friends, but I've never had the opportunity for them like together next to each other long enough for me to like get it down with confidence. And I don't think that should mean I'm racist. And then I do it further. I'll say, screw you. What if I brought in a Swede and a Norwegian and they walked in front? Could you pick them up? You couldn't, you dicks, you're racist. You know, so it's like, it's about, and then after that, I go into a bit where I say, did you know the word racism was coined in 1900, and I forget the date. I think it seems it was 1904 or 19, something like that. Did you know that? That's when it first was coined.
No, I didn't know that.
And I say, which seems a little late to come up with that term so late in the game. It's just crazy, which makes me wonder what horrible things have we been doing now. We're doing them right now. We don't even have a word for it yet. We don't even know. And then our grandkids will come with a word and throw it in our face, you know, grandpa. So anyway, that's, it goes from there. But now, is that racist?
Well, like when you were saying that, racism is a term that they had to create at some point. Before that, the only racist equivalent term was abolitionist.
Oh yeah. Right? Yeah.
So that became a divisive term. Like you're an abolitionist or you're,
we're,
I don't
normal.
Know, was there, you're pro-slave? An abolitionist. Like what did you call the other side? Pro-slavers?
Man. So what you're saying is the abolitionists just took a long time to come up with a word. We got to come up with something better than this. I called them finks. It just doesn't have a good,
well, and the word abolition has nothing to do with race. It was like get rid of slavery. It's get rid of a business practice, right?
Yeah.
That became it's a human rights issue and all that other stuff. But really, it was a business practice for the South. That's the only reason they did it is because they needed labor and they needed cheap labor. And so let's abolish that. But it never said treat Black people better or any of that stuff. It was not racist. It was anti-business.
Yeah, it was about a way of business that was inhumane. They saw it going on. Thought, this is, it was, the racism was used as a rationale to do it. And the opposite, no, these aren't. Yeah, this. Anyway, I get the occasional hate mail from a social justice warrior.
Well, and racism. Racism is so complicated.
Yeah.
It is so deeply complex. Everybody is clearly racist in every race, everywhere in the world. because it's a distinguishing tool. It's a distinguishing apparatus, cognitive apparatus that human beings are programmed with. In fact, I think all beings are programmed with it. You know, you have to be able to tell what something is in your environment in order to decide whether it's dangerous or not.
To make a decision about it.
So it's programmed into whatever survived on Earth. That ism, that evaluationism is a survival mechanism.
I think so too. Yeah. Yeah. You make generalizations about you and you stereotypes I used to have a bit where I'd say, I said, there are inaccurate stereotypes. Now, if you can make really accurate stereotypes about specific cultures, that makes you a, and then I'll always, every time I get racist, no, an anthropologist. You dick, by definition, you're an anthropologist. You're not a racist. And then the line was something like this. That's not right. We celebrate diversity. We don't acknowledge it. You know, this kind of, it just gets so twisted in on ourself. It's counterproductive. I think one of the things that's happening is when people do that to me, what I've been telling them is like, look, when you call me a racist and you define racism as loosely as you do, you cast such a wide net that you end up catching a lot of just fairly normally bigoted humans, wherein racists can hide. You validate them. They stand next to you. Hey, call me a racist too. You know, all I did was stab this guy. Whoa, you know, did not. These are not the same kind of humans, you know?
So. And that's kind of always been my point with people. That's why I always start from, the basis of all the rhetoric training stuff that I do is you've not been made sophisticated yet enough to be able to deal with a highly complex environment.
Oh, yeah.
Our tools that we're taught are not good enough for this crazy modern environment that's evolving.
That is so true. Yeah.
And that's what's breaking all the time.
That is
true. Try to go back and retrofit people with enough sophistication. They're all like, I can't handle it. It's too much. Like the column that I wrote today about Fauci, I probably laid out 25 principles that you have to follow. And within each of those, there's probably, between 25 and 100 sub principles that you have to go through in order to decide whether he is actually, what his actual credibility is versus claimed credibility.
And
nobody's going to do that.
Fauci himself, but we don't pay attention to provenance. I've been thinking about provenance, where we're getting our, is this a word? Am I using it right? Provenance for our proof, for our source of information. Like I had a little short thing I wrote the other day that like a good con man fools you, a great con man fools someone you trust. And that's what we've fallen into. This asshole, Russ Ramsland, went around and fooled people into thinking he was some sort of cybersecurity expert. He's not. He's the grandson of some goddamn oil tycoon. He has a Harvard MBA. Now he's got a white hat hacker. He's not a white hat hacker. His white hat hacker turns out to be an army mechanic. I mean, these two jackasses, he pushed the experts out of this company. And now they march around the country saying, oh, voter fraud. And people just lap it up because they do not check. How did you put it? Is credibility or how to establish credibility? They don't even look at it.
Yeah, because there's claimed credibility, which anybody can make. A claim doesn't have evidence, doesn't have anything. It's just a claim.
Yeah.
And then there's actual credibility, which has a whole set of, you have to make a claim, you have to give evidence, you have to use qualifiers, warrants, refutations, conclusions, and then action warrants. And those are all logic pieces that nobody ever gets trained how to do.
Yeah, I don't know any of that. I just don't trust. This is why I don't trust Ramsland. The Washington Post, now, okay, I don't know how they claim their credibility, but the article I read on Ramsland, this guy in a meeting full of conservative whack jobs said that the deep state was started during World War II by Prescott Bush, the Muslim Brotherhood, and George Soros. And they all nodded their head because this is Russell Ramsland. Soros was born in 1930, you dipshits. You think they invited a 15-year-old Hungarian American to the teenager to the damn what? How do you believe any more words that comes out of this asshole's face? I just do not understand. Now you're hearing what the dog heard on the walk.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just weird again. So our skill level and our modern environment, right? So the modern environment doesn't give, it gives all this mediated information. And it's not mainstream media. It's mediated. Yeah. It comes from two. You're never in the middle of these things.
Yeah.
Nobody here has ever met George Soros. We've never met Fauci.
No.
We've never met anybody who knows them personally. Yeah. We have no way of vetting them with direct information or direct evidence, direct experience.
Yeah. Yes.
And yet you're drawing these super strong conclusions because that's what quiets the storm. You know, all the crazy storm around all these things. The only way to quiet is just, I'll pick this belief. I believe that, and I don't care about the evidence or anything else.
Yeah. And it does become, what's that word called? Group or social proof. They just lean on the social proof. Like, well, everybody, Bob believes it. Bob's a good guy. If I don't believe it, Bob won't like me anymore. You know, he'll want his lawnmower back. I've had that for 2 months. It's literally these kind of social connective tissue. And he's, Trump and this movement have wheedled their way into that. And
I think you hit on it earlier with when you get trained in a religion and pretty much any religion, but especially American, you know, Christianity religions, the hardcore religions, Christian religions, it trains you to accept crazy shit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Without a ton of questions. Like I remember I've always been a thinker. So I was sitting in Catholic mass as a kid, listening to the things that they would say and going, what? I can remember so many times wanting to raise my hand and go, but there's none of that during the, you know, liturgy or the, whatever it's called, the when they're preaching to, you don't get to ask questions. They just get to make claims with no investigation.
Yeah. And if you put it like that, I mean, that's what these political talk shows turn into. It's just a person they trust in a suit just blabbing away. I mean, the claim, the one today that I was reading about, I couldn't listen to him, but I was reading Tucker Carlson's little rant, and it was just so stupid. It was just so goddamn dumb. First of all, well, Laura Ingraham, she says, we funded the lab, Dan. That's what Laura, we funded the Wuhan lab. Okay,
it turns out
it's $600,000 over 5 years. That's a pretty fucking cheap lab. Out of hundreds of millions of dollars, you're going to pull out $120,000 a year and say, we funded it. And based on that metric, Dan, you and I, our tax money funded the last mission to Mars. That's what I'm going to say. We covered the bit. And then you don't use it that way. You know, so the way they do that stuff, like we funded the lab. Well, let's look at the word funded and did we really? And it's, no, that's, you're using the wrong word. But they, like you say, they're good at these little snippets, and now that's, well, we funded it. No, God, we did not. No, that's not how it. And how do I fight that?
Do you want to know a rhetorician technique for what they do, their master technique?
Yes, I do.
It's a qualifier. They don't use qualifiers correctly. If they'd have said we partially funded the lab,
yes,
they'd have been fine. But they drop the qualifiers, so they make incredibly strong claims because they never qualify. They overclaim.
Yeah.
And they do that with everything. So it's a lack of qualifiers. And if you call people just on that, it's a really useful technique if you do try to argue with the right, which is really hard to do because they're triggerable within arguments, but just use qualifiers as a technique and go, was that always true? How often is that true? Where did you know?
How much? Kind of
qualifier tells you how strong a claim or evidence is.
Especially that one, funded. You're going to call that funded? It's like we go to dinner. Okay. I pay the bill. I cover the tab. You cover the parking. And then you walk around, bought dinner for Bent last night. No, you asshole. You didn't. I mean, it's such a bizarre, it's insane. It's insane.
Do you have any thoughts on whether all the stuff going on right now about was it from bats or was it lab escape?
Oh, I read early on. I mean, I read some of the typical stuff that came out from what I thought was more reputable sources. And it led me to believe it was definitely from nature. I did not vet. How do you put it? I didn't look at the credibility of the source enough. So it turns out, as I've read more now recently, the science, I read a really good article on it. One of the main voices that was pushing it, it's definitely nature, not lab, had a lot of skin in the game. He's some, he owns one of the companies that's, and I don't know. How would I know? I think
you don't.
It's possible.
You don't. We have zero ability to make that decision.
Yeah. It's possible. Do I think Fauci's evil? No. That's where I go. I don't understand it.
Well, he has to be drug over. So think of, my book came out 2 weeks ago, right? My first book, The 21 Colosseums of Persuasion. And it's essentially a master structure for designing persuasion. So if you look at, there are 21 locations that you could go to battle somebody about an issue. So Fauci, for example, over here is his credibility. That's the ethos Colosseum. And next to that is logic. And sometimes they combine. Okay. So, but over here is story. And what they have to do is drag you out of ethos. Oh, yeah. They have to drag you out of logic over into story. So he has to be made a villain. Yeah. And villains, it doesn't matter whether it's true or not.
Oh man, that's true.
You have to have villainy.
So true. And yeah. And in this case, he's got to be really bad because the hero is such a villain, you know?
How did they do that? He's like 4 feet tall. He's a Keebler elf. He's 80 years old. He's been at the, you know, top of disease, you know, prevention and control around the world for 40 years. But now he's a villain.
Yeah. And they found a bombshell proving it now. They've got all these emails. And it's just, it's all this email crap again. It's like you say, they just pick a few emails and then they'll show me the email and then they'll say something that does not match up at all with the email.
Yeah.
Or like you say, they leave the qualifiers out.
There are 10,000 emails. Yeah. Are you going to go read all 10,000 of Tony Fauci's emails?
Yeah.
One, they won't even read the email that they're all going after.
Yeah.
They're hearing somebody else mediate that email over to them. Cause he was on CNN earlier today saying, that email doesn't say that. And it's also taken completely out of context. I was telling somebody, thank you for sending me this information, not validating the information. I was validating that person.
I saw when I read the emails, there was nothing there. But when you hear them talk, it's like they just witness.
That's why Hillary got nailed. Like emails are really good, creepy evidence because they can be hidden. They're they're secrets.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
They're this kind of conspiracy backstage that shows how evil these people really are on their email, you know?
Yeah. And there was nothing there. I remember those too. I was like, these are dumb. None of these. Oh, they ordered pizza. It's pizza. Code word for babies, they're drinking baby blood. I mean, it's hyper magical thinking. Hyper.
Yeah, that's great. I think storyism.
That's the prime example.
It's a better story than what the Democrats are telling.
Yes.
It's sci-fi.
Yeah. It's a way better story than he went to college. He got a PhD. He worked hard for a long time. He kissed the right asses.
He did that. You can trust him.
Yeah.
Like, I don't trust that guy. Look at him. I've seen, emails where people literally say, there's just something about him I just don't trust. I'm like, that is not evidence. That is not logical evidence.
Not even close.
That's a psychological reaction you're having to somebody after they've been slandered by, 50 sources coming at you over here.
Everybody you know and sources you trust. And they believe in the same version of God you believe in. That you watch him every night. You laugh with them. Yeah.
So what are your like worry bits? Like, if you're going to do these, you're going to lose half the audience when you do
this. Well, the one about the baby blood ones, definitely. Like the one.
Is that a bit you have?
Here's the thing about the cult, the Hollywood cult of pedophiles, Dan. And I've met seemingly rational people, but there is a lot. You think that's where it's concentrated? Because I would say scouts in church. I would say those are the top two. They are duking it out for top two pedophile. I know I had one guy approach me when I was 10. In Mormonism, you go to a thing called Baptism for Dead. Baptism for the Dead. Have you heard of this?
No. What's that?
That's the thinking.
That's a great name.
You're baptized in proxy for people who died so that when they go to meet God, they say, oh, I got my baptism right here. Here's my certificate.
Awesome. What a great workaround.
There's a beautiful aspect to it. We won't get into that. Let's just say what happened was, after I got done with Baptism for the Dead, I went into the shower area of the Mormon temple because I needed to dry off. And there was a middle-aged man with a towel just waiting to dry me off. Here. And he grabbed me, wrapped the towel around me, and I like squirmed and ran away. Like, oh no, I'll do it myself. No, thank you. So the one time a pedophile tried to get me, it wasn't in Hollywood. It wasn't. It was in a church. I don't know. It's just the way they pull focus off the pedophile. How many rooms, you know, this has happened over and over throughout our country, where there's been a pedophile in the room while his uncle or aunt or mom or dad or brother or sister ranted about the pedophiles in Hollywood. And they just sat here just like, yeah, those damn Hollywood pedophiles getting all the good stuff. Whatever they're saying, it's insane. For just that part. And here's the other thing that's not logical. Why is it? Why is it that this supposed cabal of pedophile baby blood drinkers, why is it that as a rule, that part of the party, Clinton and all of them, are pro-choice? That just cuts down their supply. You think they would be against any abortions at all? It just drives up price and down. I don't know what the demand, the drinking of the baby blood. And they say they're drinking the baby blood, Dan, to get energy, life energy from the babies. Oh, great. Another energy drink. Just what we need. What are we going to call this one? Monster's already taken. So, yeah, that I don't think that means. How much blood do they drink? Is it like pure or is it diluted? Is it certain parts per million? I don't know. They got to bottle it. They got to ship it. The refrigeration trucks, the logistics of this cabal, all from a pizzeria without a basement. How do they do it? The deep state. They never cease to amaze.
Now, is that a full bit that you've done that on stage or you just?
No. Oh, hell no. That's just new.
That's awesome. That's a great bit.
No. Yeah, I'm looking forward to trying it somewhere. I don't know where I'll try in Utah. That'll be good.
Oh yeah. There's gotta be. And then there's, you know, all the marketing for it, like the diet versions and the,
the gluten-free baby blood. Oh, jeez, they're insane.
What do you have in your regular show like that, you know, you want to do, but you don't do very often because you just feel like you don't want to work that hard?
There's one that I did for a few times in D.C. I would work in D.C., and it was about how after I laid down some of the stuff about growing up Mormon, Utah and stuff, I talk about how I think God, he is white. And I say he, which I'm just jumping there. I think he's a cisgendered white male. It seems to make sense to me. And I love to do that. So the black guys would look at me in D.C. like, and say, well, think about it for a second. I mean, knowing what I know about history, what's been going down for quite a while through history. I mean, you, and I'll usually point to someone, if you went to heaven and it was a white guy, wouldn't you say, yeah, it makes sense, right? You'd say, yeah, that I figured. But if you went up there, it was a black guy, you'd be like, what the fuck, man? So I was just trying to make things right. You are the biggest Uncle Tom motherfucker in the universe. What are you doing? I used to do that sometimes. I hope people, I swear a lot, right? I'm swearing a lot today.
No, that's fine. Like that's what I said. I want comedians to be themselves for a change, like where you don't have to worry about the market attack on your comedy from the stand-up audiences.
It's nice. It's just if they seek it out, it'll come from my dry bar special. Swearing stuff. So that's one. I think that's a good bit. It's a solid bit and it's fun and interesting. And
yeah. And I think one of the things that's what I've always really liked about guys like Stanhope and guys who really work the deviance out of life is that they wrap it in such intellectualism. There's so much truth in it that you can't really attack the offendedness part of it.
Yeah.
You can, of course, people can always be offended.
They're
experts at being offended. But like, come on, listen to the ideas, because the ideas earn the right to talk about this. You know, yeah, and Burr is great about that. You know, they're all good at finding like, okay, I know this is bad, but let's look at it.
I'm not trying to be mean. I'm trying to be honest. And I don't know if they get the sense that you're being honest instead of mean. They usually, some will let you do it, but there are a lot of people who go through life. And I don't know where this comes from, but is it consumerism where we get in our mind, I paid for this, and we have a very clear idea of this product we're buying, and it happens at a club, you know, and they sit down and like, well, this isn't what I paid for, and then there's this sense of rage, you know, and so since they have such a tight definition of what comedy is, when you go outside it at all, you know. So, and what sucks about it is then I can't go full bore into some of these things. So what I end up doing is going a little so that those kind of people, like, well, he's okay.
You know? Yeah, but then you're cheating. Then you're cheating your real audience, right? I mean, yeah, we've all done this, and I've run this my whole career too, where I can write very moderate, very acceptable. I worked the South forever, write clever, but not too intellectual, you know, so that they can get it. And then you have saves and explainer, you know, tags in there so that people can all follow along. But they end up pulling your comedy down instead of, you know, raising it up to, let me tell something to the smartest, most accepting person. And I can still teach them something new because I've thought about stuff that you haven't thought. And that to me is like the super value of stand-ups, is those minds will just grind on things until they find a new angle.
Yeah.
You know, the new angles are where the energy and the solutions are.
I think so. I think it's an obsessiveness. When I get obsessed about it, because I'll meet people that are smarter than me all the time, but they're not obsessed. They don't have the time to just tumble it and tumble it and tumble it for hours to where I think of things that I shouldn't. Like there's a bit I haven't done a lot, but I like doing. And it was about how did I get into it? It was about abortion and how the morning after pill. And I say, that's not a person. Yeah, it's not. It's the morning. Have you seen a zygote? Have you seen what it even looks like? Like if you walked in, I'll say in the club, if you came to this club here and on the table, there was like a zygote there, just whatever. It was just sitting there. None of you would say, oh, hey, someone left their baby on this table. No, you'd say, hey, you didn't wipe this table down good. Does someone have a jelly sandwich? Come and wipe this down? You wouldn't say it's a baby. And then during the show, I'll reach my finger out and touch it. See, you would not say, see how when I touched it, you went, ew. You went, ew. You went, ew. When you touch a baby like this, you don't go, ew. You go, goochie, goochie, goo. It's cute. But this was gross because it's not a baby. And I would go into that hole. It's not a baby. And the question is, when does it become human? That's the real question. And man, I don't know. I've seen pictures. I guess that's how I have to judge. And it's hard, but there's a certain line where I'd like, nope. Yeah, that's got constitutional rights probably. Nope. You know what I mean? And I think that's how we could solve abortion. It's just, we had a butterfly ballot type thing, like a big, you know, the big paper ballots they call them. And then we just had the progression of it on there. And then the entire country just circled where they wouldn't be able to. You just, nope, that's my line. And then we could come up, yep, I kill that. I get, yeah, that could, they, nope, that, that's not. And then we could have a compromise. You know what I mean? But as it is now.
See, that's great. That's a solution. That's what stand-ups are so good at. I think stand-ups, I'm going to at some point bring like you and Simmons and Bevins or whoever else, and we'll do like three or four people at one time on a topic. But like, I had this idea, like, I think stand up, like any money you spend on comedy should be tax deductible. Because if you if you just funded the comedians and said, look, you figure out abortion, we're going to put 3,000 of you on this issue. They would come up with solutions. Like, that's a perfectly viable solution.
Yeah, it would, at least we could come to some consensus. Whereas now it's people who think it's a baby the morning after, which is nuts. That's crazy. But then on the other hand, in Utah, we had, I guess, a woman who was a heroin addict, and she had twins and carried them to almost 8-something months and then needed hospital, and she refused to let the doctors perform. She ran to the hospital, said, save my life, but don't save the babies. No, no. And they're like, we need to save. No, you are not allowed. And the doctors did it anyway. And then she sued the doctors, and the ACLU went at with on her side. I'm like, wait, this, wait a second. That's you crossed the line here. That's like, holy, that's, jeez, Louise. So it's like, I don't know. I just know the people running the conversation are not rational. I know that much.
Well, abortion is one of those things that completely resists rationality, because it's one of those odd situations where two things are true, two opposing things are true at the exact same time.
And it is a gray. It's a gray, and it's
not even a gray. It's an overlay.
Oh, I gotcha. Oh, that's right. Yeah. It's, yeah, they overlap.
You can't, you can solve one of those, but not with the presence of the other.
Yeah. Yeah. That's insane. And it's emotional, hyper emotional. And
it's been hyper emotionalized.
Yeah.
It's not hyper emotional for everybody. Like, I don't have a lot of emotion about it. Do you?
I'm not that much, a little, because, you know, grandkids, you know what I mean? Like, oh, those are cute.
Well, they're not coming up for your kids, right?
Yeah. They're here. Yeah, you're right. Well, the thing about abortion is, when people equate it to murder, that I just, no. I mean, if you go far enough along, I would. But still, when I think what makes murder bad isn't the person that's dead. They don't feel a thing. They're gone. They don't miss their shit. They don't miss anybody. They're gone. And if they're in heaven, then they're in heaven. And they're even seem better. And if they're in hell, well, they got what they deserve. So
that's a bad fetus. Bad fetus.
But with murder, I'm saying it's that way. When you think of a murder, what makes it horrible is what it does to all the survivors. I mean, it just blasts holes in the lives of all these people, and they can't be replaced. It ruins all those lives that still have to be lived out, which in turn ruins this many lives. So it's those repercussions. When you think about an abortion, it's not victimed. The victims aren't there. The one person or two people, I've heard there's conflict and guilt, but it's one person, and there's lots of relief too. So I don't, you see what I mean? Like,
exactly.
It makes a crime. It doesn't even fit. It doesn't fit as a murder at all.
So this is one of the things I'm going to do too, like in my other life of actually teaching people rhetoric. My second book is Why America Can't Think. And it's that idea of trying to use a primitive brain in a postmodern environment. Like, you can't do it. It just doesn't work. So you have to upgrade your brain if you're going to do this. So one of the ways to upgrade your brain is to get a bunch of really smart, interesting, creative people to pre-work the issues for you. And then you can just sort of peruse the issue broken apart, so you can see all the things. So you don't have to think your way through it. You can just consume your way through the argument. And so, like, then, what you've just done here, nobody has laid this out like this. I never heard anybody ever say, hey, what about the survivors? You know, what about the repercussions on the community around it? There's only two people. That's a perfectly viable position. Also, it's new. It's unique. I haven't heard that before. The whole, you know, let's all look at the pictures is unique. But if that was all laid out, then people wouldn't have to think, which they can't do anyway. It would just be like, here. So in that book, one of the things I do is I take issues like I just did with Fauci, and I'm like, I'm going to completely break this apart for you. I'm going to show you all the tributaries, all the tiny little arms into it so that you can't, anything you say, it's already in there.
Yeah.
I'm just going to point it out like, oh yeah, that's over here.
That's helpful. It's helpful.
It's the only way to work in a super complicated environment.
Yeah. It's
like, you can't do it with your regular brain.
And you can't because it requires team, right? I mean, you need to have a bunch of eyes and brains tumbling it around.
Yeah. Because these are super complicated. Yeah.
Bring it together. And then it has to be handed out. Yeah.
But that's the only way humans ever make any progress. Like, they didn't figure out how to build a suspension bridge. One guy didn't figure that out. You know,
no, that's true.
Thousands and thousands of people all working on these tiny little things. And finally it was all put together. Like, hey, there you go.
It's everything. And even ideas, I've tried to talk this on stage and it's hard to come across, but even ideas that we take for granted as being obvious took millennia to evolve. Like the idea of it's wrong to own people. It took a long time. So why can't I? What it seems so obvious to us, but apparently it was really, that was a very complex idea that took a long time. Okay, so I can't own people and I can't kill them. Yeah, no, you can't. It's wrong.
It's wrong and it's not logistical. It's not logistical to be able to do it when other people are resisting it. Like when you have massive sections of the country that don't want it, you can no longer do it. Yeah. That's what really caused the Civil War, right? It's like all the South is like, I don't care if you don't like it. I'm still going to do it. And the North is like, finally, like, I'm going to stop you from doing that.
You can't do this. When part of the North's problem, and I pointed this out to my dad, the psychiatrist, a brilliant guy. I said, Dad, the problem was it was a cheaper way of doing business. And if you let that cheap way of business survive, everybody has to do it. It's like if you make stabbing legal in football, everybody's stabbing. You're not going to have a career in football unless you're stabbing. You got to have a knife on the field. And so you would have had that manner of business then. You would have had the kind of human who's able to execute that kind of practice. And what is that? That's a sociopath. That's a freaking sociopath. You would have, it's just a way to weed out more decent businessmen and make sure you have the biggest assholes possible running every business. That's what we would have had.
That's a perfectly viable way of looking at slavery is through the business economics of it, right? Well, it doesn't take away the morality. It doesn't take away all the other things. It's like, hey, here's one avenue into this. And if you look at it, it's like, it's probably a very valid way of understanding this issue. The same way like abortion and this other stuff. Like if you look at it from just a political avenue, nothing to do with anything else, whether it's right or wrong or the grossness or the murder or any of that stuff. But politically, that is such a valuable issue.
Yeah.
It's really the only reason that the extremist right has been able to take over the Republican Party.
I think so. It's between that and dudes in dresses going into restrooms. It's insane that our civil war is going to be people who aren't even here. They aren't even here yet. And then that.
People who don't want to be here as they are here.
As they are. Yeah. That's those two things. I remember when the Taliban were fighting and it came out that the things they wouldn't put up with were flying kites, toothpaste, and shaving. And I used to have a bit like, wow, I don't know if they're ready for democracy yet, because we fought a war for taxation without representation. They're fighting to fly kites, shave, and use branded toothpaste. But now here we are on the verge of a war. Every bit is.
Yeah, it's crazy. Well, it's been super fun, man. I'm digging these. This is the other stuff I was doing, like sort of the pro comedians was just basically about learning your career, but this sort of working issues and doing politics. Yeah. I definitely like doing this.
Yeah. It's fun. This is fun to talk about. It is.
Yeah. And like I said, free the comedians, free them up. Yeah. Let them talk about whatever they want.
Leave us alone, but pay us. I mean, hire us.
It should just be, you know, 1% of the GDP goes to our creative thinkers.
Yeah, gets it going.
Well, that's what gets us out of all this stuff is the creative, innovative thinking.
Eventually, and this, what we're facing now, isn't an engineering, you know, it's a different, it's not that, it needs seed money, just like other research. You're right. And it's not going to be an engineer, and it's not going to be, it's not, this is a different thing we're facing. I don't know how
we literally need logic theory, there's abductive thinking, which are just people who conglomerate. Like, they don't see the linear process, induction and deduction back and forth like this. They see clusters and they pull two things together that just instantly, it's what their brains do. And that's what comedians do.
Yeah.
Like you just did, like, you know, just pulling, you know, Hollywood pedophiles versus Southern, you know, regular pedophiles.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
They're both pedophiles, but I've never heard those two pulled together like that before.
Like sitting in the same room.
Yeah. And so that type of brain comes up with solutions because it's not following what everybody else has already laid out as a pathway.
Yeah, I get it. It's got to, that's the only way it'll be funny. It has to be. If they've heard it before. Well, theoretically.
Theoretically.
Yeah.
Well, cool, man. Super fun. We'll circle back around. I'll have this up. I'm going to put them up on Wednesdays, I think. So Simmons was yesterday, and I'll get yours up next week.
I'll go see Simmons.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, yeah. He ran some of his classic bits too. And oh my God, there's an abortion in there. He does Israel Palestine.
He's great.
Really funny.
No, he's a great.
All right, man. Thanks a lot. Go to Bent Washburn's, you know, find him on Google, Google him and buy his stuff.
Yeah. See you, Dan.
German Marx. This has been Rhetoric Warriors Podcast, Comedians with Issues. Keep coming back. We will keep telling jokes.